Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Conor Buckley, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Thanks for coming in.
Delighted to be here.
Yeah.
Despite the sun outside.
I was mentioning about your mum and the fact you were coming in and the fact that there's a direct line from what we were hearing on Liveline to you and your mum. Because it was back in 1992 when she told her story to Gay Byrne.
Yeah, incredible.
In this very building.
Yeah.
It could have been in this very studio, we don't know.
I know, and at the time I didn't realise what a trailblazer she was and, you know, how controversial it was to do that. I mean, to do it today would be really tough, but back then, like, the strength of character she must have had. You know, my dad's a great man, but he would have been, you know, conservative Cork man, you know, and he wouldn't have wanted that attention on the family, but it was just something that was in her bones that she had to expose. And little did she know, over 100,000 people had gone through the same traumatic upbringing in these orphanages, you know. So she was a voice for other people, which is, I'm so proud of what she was able to do.
And it's mad the way Ireland works. It's so small, isn't it? Because her dad, who was a Nigerian med student in Dublin, he knew Al Byrne, who was Gay Byrne's brother.
I know, what of the chances?
It's mad, isn't it?
Isn't it? Like, he was over for dinner in Gay Byrne's house, and then Gay Byrne invited him on the Late Late Show as well for like a Trinity reunion, because he studied in Trinity.
Okay.
And mum was in the audience, and it was interesting. They always had this bond, my mum and him, for whatever reason. Maybe they looked more alike, or maybe she remembered him going to the orphanage, but they always had this bond. And and then Gay Byrne obviously exposed it, you know, and the whole, I mean, remember when there was a big documentary about Gay Byrne's life, and it was a big part of it.
Yes.
Because my mum wrote a letter into him and he kindly brought her on. So I reflect on those times and think how, you know, naive we were as a family about it, but how much it was such a pivotal time for Ireland. And it helped Catherine Corliss State of Fear and all these people.
Mary Raftery, all of those people came
after.
It's a
great reference point.
Yeah.
She's in Reading, you know, you're not going Reeling in the Ears now and again, you see her.
Yeah. No, but I'm wondering, because you would have had the chats with your mum then, and you must realise then and empathise with the people who are coming onto Liveline and telling their stories, how difficult it is.
Yeah, she had a great way of teaching empathy in a way of, she always would stop you, you know, if you said something about someone, and she'd say, well, look, just look at it from their point of view. And honestly, in life today, even now, try and do that. The amount of times, if you put yourself in the other person's shoes, would you behave that way? Would you accept that? So she had a great way of, like, I remember those people in the house who, you know, we don't live too far from here, but, you know, the house would be, I remember there was a celebration. It might have been when Bertie Ahern
public apology.
In 99. It might have been that time. And there was a lot of, you know, lots of people in the house, and I wanted to go to bed or whatever it was. And I said, well, I just didn't want people around the table. And mum said, some of these people don't have a family. They don't have a home. Don't have a home to go to. So it was a good way to teach empathy to a teenager, you know. And I think there was a lot of that type of conversation in our house. You would always extend the olive branches to people and give them the benefit of the doubt.
You know, she trained as a nurse and she married your dad and three children and all that. And she, so your childhood was worlds away from her childhood.
Yeah. What I think's fascinating, Ray, is like you often see the cycle of poverty continue. Like, she's an official charity, a centre. And when you walk in, you can see how lives have been destroyed. You know, you can see people who've just been through the ringer. And she was able to somehow, despite the abuse and the trauma, she was able to try and give the best to her children, you know. And she really, I actually think she overgave in a way, because she was so passionate about giving love to children. So I think there was a famous line she said in court to one of the nuns, where she said something like, one of the nuns was trying to explain, look, they're under pressure, they had too many children to mind. And my mum said, well, they could have just given a hug instead. And it was that idea. She would have hugged all our friends, you know. I remember.
And you're a hugger. You come in. You come in. And the first thing you did was you said to me. That's the first thing you said to me. I'm a hugger.
She definitely. I mean, when you walked in the door from school, she'd hug you like you'd never see you again. So it was just, you know, just like literally squeezed you. And at the time, you're probably like, "Oh, mum, go easy." But she had that, like, you know, she literally, and I did that a bit with my wife when I leave the house. I like nearly hug her like I'll never see her again, you know, because she was so affectionate like that.
And I suppose, I don't know, it's difficult to imagine what she'd be thinking listening to Liveline. And the stories are still coming out and people are still telling their stories for the first time. And they're still pleading with everybody, just let us be heard. Apologise. The money isn't that important. We just want to be
heard.
That's
it. You're spot on, right? That's all she used to talk about. She used to, that's all. She was like, it's not about the money. It's about the apology. And when she first wrote to her abuser, it was a letter just to say, look, this is what you did to me. This is the names you call me. This is what you subjected me. I'd like an apology in order to move on. If her abuser had actually just written back on, Christine, I'm really sorry. I should never have poured boiling water over your leg. I should never have split your legs open. I shouldn't have done this. She likely would have accepted that, you know, because she was going for counselling therapy at the time. But because the nun, and there's good nuns and bad nuns, she always would have said, wrote back such an abusive letter, that's when she took the story forward. So, you know, it's a really interesting way of calling in and calling out. Calling in is when you give someone an opportunity to apologise, and calling out when you unfortunately have to go public sometimes. And I do think if she was around today, I think she'd be supporting everyone on that, because I think when you're on that journey, it never really ends for you. You know, there's an amazing activist called Alva Smith. She does the same. She still supports every community. So I think she would keep going on that because I think it's in her.
Yeah, and her view, your mother's view of the world, obviously has rubbed off on you.
Yeah, you know, look, it probably took, in a way, you know, I wonder if she was around, would I be doing this? I felt like it was a way of keeping the memory alive, and the legacy alive. It's I grew a big afro years ago, Ray, when she passed away. I think people do different things. You know, when you lose someone, you want to keep that memory alive. And I grew that, like, my first daughter's called Chrissy after my mum, you know, and she's fiery and she's fun, just like her. And it's great to see that spirit. And I think Human Collective is something that I want to do, something that had a real purpose. You know, we'd done charity cycles for my mum's centre, we'd done different things, but I want to do something that would...
I suppose you're sort of interesting in that you're very corporate, you know.
Yeah.
Like, people will know about Press Up. Like, an amazing growth of restaurants and hotels, and just unstoppable at one stage.
Yeah.
And you were up there in the upper echelons of that organization.
Yeah.
Very corporate organization, high pressure, sell,
yeah,
profit,
exactly.
profit.
Yeah.
You know,
you're spot on with all that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then at some stage, you decided that maybe there's something else.
I know. So, like, if I'm brutally honest, I loved it. I loved working with Paddy McKillen. I loved the whole fast paced nature. You're right, the corporate business was incredible. And, but at some point, and you know, maybe it was my first child coming along during COVID, and I looked at him and I thought, I want to be so proud of, like, I'm so proud of my dad and my mum. I was fortunate to have really great parents, and I want to do something that had a bit more of a soul to it.
That he'd be proud of you.
Yeah,
oh, yes.
That type of thing, exactly. And then, sorry, like, I can't say, like when George Floyd was murdered, probably deeply affected. I remember talking to my brother that day, and we were both really upset by his murder. I think it was the 25th of May, 2020. So both those ran along the lines, and I wanted to do something that just had a bit more. I wanted to see, could a business be a business and be trying to be profitable, but also have a real soul to it, to give back. And to, like, so we still do talks in schools. We still do lots of talks in companies.
You do talks about racism and...
Yeah, racism. We do sexism, homophobia.
Right.
But we do it in a positive way, because my mum had a positive spirit. So we don't name it. It's not shaming people. It's just about opening people's minds. About resilience, you know, about my mum's story on that. And because a lot of people come into schools, talk about business. So it's nice to have something that is not just about business.
They seem like they're difficult, awkward bedfellows. You know, being an advocate and an activism and making profit.
You know what, Ray? I think about that. I have a great friend called Barry Plunkett now, and we talk about it a lot. And it's a really interesting mindset, because if you think of it like, and I do think about turning it into a non-for-profit, if I'm honest with you, and maybe moving back into hospitality, because in the last 2 weeks I've been offered two jobs in hospitality.
Right.
And I didn't plan to say this publicly, because I wonder about those worlds, because at one point with clothing, you're trying to create really premium aspirational clothing, which I think we've actually achieved in the last 6 months, but also you're trying to get a kind of a message across, you know, and people view clothing as aspiration. They maybe don't want to share their values. What we have found is that companies have really, really love our message, you know, and really, and we've got well, over 150 corporate clients. So all the multinationals really believe
in it. So the Human Collection, so it's sort of sustainable leisurewear brand. Mm. And your logo has a message, it's the equal sign.
Yeah.
And that, so it's about equality.
Exactly. It's all about this. Yeah. And it's a very subtle logo. So we don't stuff it in people's faces. Yeah. We shop in Stephen's Green. People come in. Some people just love the fit and the colours and the quality. And some people just come in for the message. So I'd like to think it'd be something for everyone.
It's like somebody on the team was wearing one, I think last year. And I said, where'd you get that? And I hadn't heard about you. So I noticed it. Because the branding is very, very subtle.
Yeah.
Which suits me because I'm a very subtle person.
Yeah.
Connor. So we all wear clothes. We all wear clothes.
Yeah.
So I suppose it's putting your message on your sleeve, wearing your heart in your sleeve, sort of thing.
Exactly.
So by somebody purchasing one of your t-shirts, they have a high end brand, high end product, but they're also making a statement about what they believe in.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, like I always ask people online or if there's any, you know, somebody comes to the shop, why did you buy? And so, I said some people just buy for the colour, some people buy because they like the subtlety, and some people like buy because they feel good, you know, they feel good wearing it because they feel like, you know what, I do believe in equality, I do believe in fairness, I do believe in doing the right thing. I do. People love sustainability these days as well. Everything's 100% organic cotton. So, but also people ultimately, Ray, like if you think of when they're purchasing, it has to look good. You know what I mean? Like all the messaging and everything is great. And we could donate. We did a t-shirt there. We've done socks for LGBT Ireland. We've done these things, but it has to look good ultimately, you know. So you actually have to put that up at the top of it.
They won't come back for a second one.
Big time. We've a great guy on our team. He's a brilliant guy, Peter Dowling, and he's hilarious because I'm a bit of a philosophical and ideological person, a bit of an emotional person. You know, stay up all night talking to my mum. And Peter's very much, don't forget, it's got to look cool. It's got to look, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So
you're considering going back into hospitality and making the Human Collection as a sort of a non-for-profit?
Human Collective. Yeah, I think we'll always can do our talks. I think we'll always do them. We'll always go back to schools and we'll always do that.
But are you seriously considering that now?
Do you know what? I haven't discussed this with my team, so it's a bit mad me talking about it. But I'm too honest.
Push it.
Exactly. Yeah, we're live, are we? Oh, shit. As soon as my language... No, the reality is there's some I think we've only started our journey, so I'd hate it for it to end. I think we're getting real traction. Like we're up 60% on last year. So like business is actually going great for us. But the reality is you've also got to think about the long term.
It's a cutthroat business.
It is. It's a tough game.
Yeah.
It's a tough game. I'm honestly phenomenally grateful to people. When you tell me that someone's wearing it and someone else told me that earlier on today and you see people wearing it, like I'm so grateful. And there's a lot of reciprocity, I think, because of my previous history looking after people. But there's, you know, I'm so grateful to people because you're competing against global businesses. Yeah. You know, why would they...
What age are you, Conor?
44.
44. So you've seen big changes in Ireland when it comes to racism and how multicultural the country has become. And you would have been sort of hyper aware of it because of yourself and your mum. So what are your thoughts
on
it?
I got to be honest, ultimately, overall, I feel like I've been very fortunate. But I do think we've got to be incredibly careful now of where it's going because I think sometimes the importance of, you know, when I talk to companies, I feel like I'm preaching to the converted. Anyone who's in the room for a talk in Google, they're probably there because they believe in it. How do we get to the people who aren't in the room? And that's why the schools are really important because I did a talk in a school recently. And at the end of a corporate talk, you might get 3 or 4 hands up. 50 hands up in a school.
What sort of questions are they asking?
Well, like everything from what names were you called and how did it affect you? And, we're really honest with people. You know, I did this... I don't know if you have time for this, Ray, but I did this brown eye, blue eye study with a class recently. And I can't say I created this experiment myself. It was an amazing activist called Jane Elliott did in the 60s when Martin Luther King was assassinated. And I said, hands up here is blue eyed, and half the class put their hands up, and hands up blue eyed or green eyed, and hands up here is brown eyed. And I separated them. And I said, did you know to the brown eyed people that you're superior to the blue eyed people? And some of them were like, yeah, we actually knew that. We taught that. And the blue-eyed people were like, what do you mean? We're not. And I go, for the rest of the day, guys, just so you know, you're going to have to stand the blue-eyed, green-eyed people. But going forward, that's the way it's going to be. You're not going to be able to use the change rooms. You're not going to be able to do this. And I put these restrictions in. I kind of fast forward an hour later. We started coming back to Q&As. And people are annoyed about standing while everyone else is, you know, the brown-eyed people are sitting. And I said, how does that feel to be... And someone said, I feel like I'm being discriminated against. Yeah. You know, these are 8-year-olds. And I said, that's exactly it. He goes, it's not fair. Why would we be treated differently just because of the colour of her eyes. And I go, that's exactly how it feels. Why would people be treated differently for the colour of their skin, for their beliefs, for their religious beliefs, whatever it is? And it's a great way, instead of putting a projector on the wall, to teach people. And that feeling. And I asked the blue-eyed green people, how do you feel? And they go, one person said, oh, well, I never knew I wasn't clever anyway. So it's amazing when the narratives that can come into it. And Jane went another step further and she got them to do tests. And basically, to put a long story short, Ray, the people were told they're superior, did the test faster.
Of course, yes. Yeah,
but then they reversed it the next day. They actually did the test slower. So that's amazing when you're told about superiority.
When you're told you're not good. Exactly. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes, exactly. So it's just a fascinating. So I'm big into this.
It's interesting about children, though, because they learn, don't they? And they learn mostly from their parents. So if they're using racist words, they've probably heard them at home.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, like the experiences I had when I was younger, it certainly came from the parents. And I remember being really upset one day and my mum saying, I'm just calling up to the parents about this. I'm not going to punish this boy. I'm going to make sure that his parents know this. And she did it in a very educational way because her whole belief was about education. And like the N-word would have said to us. And again, I remember being really young here in the N-word going, what is this word? You know? And again, I look back on that and it was, you know, it would have come from the parents. So some of those, I remember speaking to someone recently who had said it years ago. And he said, I thought that was just the way we refer to. So, you know, that's, you know, my parents spoke like that and I just thought that was the way. So obviously at the very simplest form, you have to eliminate that.
So you were saying we're at a dangerous time.
Yeah. You know, even when, so we talk about Ireland being so great because it's multicultural, but how do we get it intercultural? And I mean, by engaging with communities, because I said to a friend recently, who's been a great supporter of me and my mum, my family. And I said to him, I said, Brian, why do you think? He was talking about a group of guys who use racist terminology and they're from a really affluent background. So it wasn't someone from, you know, a really working class background. And they said, you know what? I don't think they've ever had friends who are black or from, you know, or Indian or whatever. So they've just never engaged. So you don't realize you've actually got a lot in common and you still see them as the other. So what we don't want to see is people going, that's them, they're over there and that's us. And I was fortunate in a way there wasn't many people like me and my brother. So we actually... we engage pretty well with the community. Now, we did
And your mixed heritage.
Exactly. And that does make
that
a difference.
That softens it. Yes,
it softens it.
Yeah, yeah.
It definitely was a friend guy in school with me and he's got way more abuse because of that. So I think we've got to engage. Like I spoke to a young black guy there and he was telling me he has like blacks against whites in the schoolyard of football. I don't want to get to
that.
You know, black lads against white guys.
All right.
I don't want to get to that. Now, me and my brother would have been up against the school if that was the case. Yeah. I don't want to get to that. I want to get to the place where we're engaging. Because I think when you engage, you realise that the barriers are broken down there. And I ultimately feel like, and actually does a company do that really well when you start in the company, they make sure you have a coffee with 10 different people. Just so you've engaged with other people. Because we might have these, you know, unconscious biases.
I couldn't let today go without acknowledging Christine Buckley. She was a powerhouse for adopted people's rights when doors were being closed in adoptees' faces. That's Barbara McKenna.
Thanks, Barbara.
Listening to that beautiful man speak so eloquently about his mother and her horrendous experiences, no matter what happens, it's about connection, caring, listening, and above all else, love. Wishing him all the best, says Maria. Lovely to hear Christine's son on today. I'm wishing him well. I knew his mum and indeed she was the best hugger. And they were the most healing hugs too. For all those who were abused in any way or institutionalised for no good reason, be gentle on yourselves. Watch Louis Lentil's film on Christine and Golden Bridge. It's available on IFI Player and we'll never forget, says Gráinne.
Oh, that's lovely. Thanks, Gráinne.
That was 1996, was it? I think the dear daughter.
Yeah, it was spot on.
And that the dear daughter comes from a letter, was it?
She wrote to her dad, to say, and like she only met him at the age of...
And he wrote back saying, dear daughter.
Yeah. Great documentary. I think it's still there.
It won awards, And then, of course, it opened the doors for States of Fear, Mary Raftery's documentaries. The Human Collective. So keep us posted as to what you decide to do. And your team. That's important.
I better ring my team after. I better have a call with the team after this.
And thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Ray.
Great to see you.
I might have just fired myself.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.